Life Takes Guts with Nidhi Swaroop. Hi, and welcome to the podcast series from the Crohn's and Colitis Society of Singapore. We will be bringing practical information to patients diagnosed with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. Family members and friends will also gain a better understanding of our life after diagnosis. We believe that our conversations will bring hope and empowerment to you as we journey together. Pavitar is a mother of four wonderful children. Diarrhea was attributed to hormonal changes during her first pregnancy more than 20 years ago. Let us hear from her all about what happened subsequently that led Pavitar to see a gastroenterologist. Having been on almost all types of medication, today we can hear firsthand from a patient who has lived with moderate to severe Crohn's disease.
Hi, Pavitar. Welcome to our podcast session today. Nice to see you, bright and chirpy.
Thank you. Thank you, Nidhi, for having me on. Thank
you. Okay, can we get started with what were the symptoms that took you from seeing a GP to seeing a gastroenterologist?
Well, I don't really remember actually seeing a GP. I think I went straight to a gastro specialist at one of our public hospitals eventually after several weeks of, in fact, months, I think, of symptoms. And those symptoms were lots of watery diarrhea several times a day, joint pains, and low-grade fever, especially in the evenings. I would just have a temperature, feel my temperature rising in the afternoon and evening, it'd be like 37 point something or the other, 0.5, 0.6, 0.8. Not quite a full-on fever, but enough to feel under the weather, just exhausted. And also, I was just continually exhausted.
Yeah, and this was roughly in which year was, what are we talking about? Like,
this would have been in 1997, I think, after the birth of my second son. Though I think the diarrhea began during my first pregnancy. I had a lot of watery diarrhea. And the gynae said, maybe it's hormonal. Let's just leave it alone and just monitor. So we didn't do anything.
That was roughly a couple of years before that, before the second son, is that?
1996. Late 95 and late 95 and half of 96 when I had lots of diarrhea and something had triggered, I think, my immune system probably. Because I was pregnant, we decided, you know, not to do anything, not to intervene with medications and just monitor and see how it went. So I think between late 95 and 97, when my second son was born, I think I had a few years then of symptoms that were just not, you know, no one knew what they were. Didn't really get medication until I think my second son was a few months old. And I actually had a fistula, actually, a perianal fistula, and I ended up being admitted to hospital, and that's when some investigations actually began.
Just for the benefit of those who are listening and hearing this term for the first time, could you just elaborate briefly what is a fistula?
Well, a fistula is like a tract, or I call it a tunnel of sorts, that occurs between two organs. So in my case, it was the rectal area, so it's a perianal around the anus. So it was on the inside, from the rectum, and it was like a little tunnel or tube-like thing that happened, and then it stool was basically coming through that tunnel and getting trapped inside. I guess you'd say close to the anus, but it was just stuck there. I actually had like a boil-like thing, and I couldn't sit down properly without discomfort. And my second son was about 3 or 4 months old, and I was breastfeeding him 7-8 times a day. I was having 7-8 watery diarrheas, and I couldn't sit down without this pain. And it got bigger. It was small, and then it just grew into this larger thing. And I thought, gosh, what is this thing? I thought it was a boil, you know.
So it was a boil kind of appearance, yeah? And around the anus area, and that's when you started thinking there's something more than just the diarrhea happening, right? So was it that the doctors then asked for certain more tests or scans that were done to find out what's happening?
Well, I went to the hospital and then they said, look, you've got all these diarrheas and you're still breastfeeding. I was also supplementing with the bottle at that point. But they said, look, you can stop the breastfeeding. And, I was so sad and I didn't want to. So I was forced to, because I had to have a few days in the hospital where they said, look, I actually had lost a lot of weight. And then they said, look, this thing, we've got to actually cut it, drain it, and make sure it remains clean and allow it to heal the fistula. So I had this surgery done. It was actually quite awful because for weeks after, every time I went to the toilet, I had to sit in afterwards, after cleaning and washing, I would have to sit in a tub of salt water just to make sure that the...
Is it the sitz bath or something it's called?
Yeah, that's what they call it, like a sitz bath. It was just salt that I dissolved in warm water and then just sit there to make sure that area did not externally anyway, it was kept as clean as possible.
Clean.
So I had to avoid, young boys.
To avoid any kind of infection.
Yes, from the externally, because we're dealing with stool and urine and so on. So extra caution with the cleanliness. Of course, there was antibiotics. And I remember just feeling so stressed because no one knew what it was. There was a fistula, but I wasn't diagnosed with Crohn's at that point or anything. So I had these two young kids and I was spending time sitting in a tub of warm salt water several times a day because I still had a baby. So it was quite
tough.
I think I was feeling frustrated and depressed and, struggling with motherhood. And at the same time, my body was, having issues. It was hard.
So fatigue was definitely a part of your life at that time. Yeah. Fatigue has already set in, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Because one is because of the delivery. You've just had a baby and your body would be recovering anyway. And then there's this added issue of the fistula and surgery. So, it would be quite a challenging time for you. And I'm just wondering if you had any help around you or people understood when you mentioned you had a fistula. Do the family members understand at that time?
Not really. I think, we're very fortunate in Singapore to be able to have domestic help or helpers quite easily. So, thankfully I had a helper at that time. I was married then to a very busy, very successful professional who, was just busy with work, understood what it was. I think he understood, but knowing what it is one thing.
Yeah.
But I think unless you experience it for yourself, it's hard for people to really enter into your experience. And so as long as I was seeing the doctors, as long as we had help at home, everything seemed to be manageable.
Yes,
but
yes.
When I was coping internally, was another story.
Was another issue, correct.
And
how long was it before you were officially diagnosed as having inflammatory bowel disease?
Well, what happened was after the fistula was treated, quite soon after, I think doctors thought, okay, let's try and rule out, do the ruling out kind of thing. Let's see what you may or may not have. So I did have scopes. I had scopes done, but again, it was inconclusive at that point. They weren't sure. And I remember very clearly that my doctor, thought I needed psychiatric help at one point because I would go to his. And I would sit there, and then when I go in to see him, I'd be all teary, very, very emotional. I'm struggling at home and no one to really, talk to about what I was going through. And no one really understood, even myself. So I wanted to really cry my eyes out. And he was like, So he said, why don't you go see a psychiatrist, And then I was like, but there's nothing wrong with me,
Yeah, absolutely. We would think about a psychiatrist as one of the three care providers when it comes to emotions, right? We would go with a counselor and then maybe a psychologist, and then we would think of a psychiatrist. But here is a doctor who immediately just talks about a psychiatrist. And then I think as lay people, we don't get it. And we associate it with serious mental illness. So it's pretty challenging for you at that time, because definitely emotions would be playing a role, having given birth, right? So that is one part. And then there's a whole lot of things happening on the inside, including surgery. And all the diarrhea and, you know, the physical symptoms are there, the emotional symptoms are there. And wow, it's something to go through.
Well, yeah, I think he couldn't cope with my emotion, didn't want to. So he thought, why don't I just hive her off to the next professional, the psychiatrist? Maybe he thought I needed antidepressants or something. And it's entirely possible that they might have tided me over a tough patch. Perhaps I needed them. I don't know, because I didn't go and see the psychiatrist. He gave me a letter and everything else. And I said, nothing wrong with you. I refuse to go and see a psychiatrist. So in the end, I stopped seeing this doctor altogether. Because I just felt, you know, we weren't connecting. So in terms of my diagnosis, I went to see someone else in another hospital. And again, it was a ruling out kind of process. If we give you this, let's see whether you get TB. If we don't get TB, then maybe it's this. Plus, let's do scopes kind of thing, you know. So we were doing a trial and error with medication, plus more tests. And then I think this was where it was finally conclusively diagnosed that I had Crohn's. And I remember feeling such a sense of relief. Plus, I mean, it was a mixture of things. Relief because finally it had a name, you know.
Name. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I think I can totally relate to that, because I had a similar experience. It took 2 years to diagnose what's wrong with me. So totally understand that part. So which year was this that you finally had the diagnosis?
Let me see, maybe 3 years of symptoms from 96 itself, if we included the diarrhea and the first pregnancy. So I would say roughly 1999, 2000, around there.
Yeah. So 2 to 3 years of all kinds of symptoms, including the fistula. Yeah. So when they actually diagnosed you as having Crohn's disease, did they tell you if it could be classified as, let's say, mild, moderate, severe? Where would they place your condition?
I think I have always been moderate to severe.
So I'm just thinking, because when we look at some of the literature on Crohn's disease, it kind of comes out that family would have it, you know. So and even doctors in Singapore would mention that there could be some genetic factor playing a role in our case. So did you go and try to find out if your father's side or your mother's side, anybody had anything close to Crohn's disease?
Interestingly enough, actually, I didn't ask, but I remember my family members were like, none of us have this. Your grandma had some, what did she have? Well, not inflammatory bowel disease. She had, you know, maybe her gut was a bit slow to, you know, she had those pouches. I forget what it's called.
That's okay, pouchitis,
Not quite pouchitis either.
Okay.
It was a mild thing, but it was not inflammatory. So, you know, nobody had this. And my father said, none of my relatives had this. So everyone was like, where did this come from? You know?
Yes.
And I was like, I have no clue. Maybe it skipped a few generations, or it revealed itself as something different in terms of autoimmune conditions, lots of diabetes, but maybe for me, it's this, you know.
Yeah.
So I have no idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could also be that they didn't have that term in their vocabulary a couple of generations ago, meaning the medical professionals didn't really come up with that kind of diagnosis. They would probably just call it some digestive issue. I have no idea, you know. It could be something like that. But when family members, be it extended family members or immediate, you know, like the parents, when they make such comments, what kind of feelings do you go through at that time?
You know, I think people don't mean to be blaming or make you feel guilt in any way, but somehow you can't escape feeling a bit of blame, you know. I remember someone said, oh, but yeah, you weren't like this before you got married, you were fine, right? Or didn't you always have a funny tummy even when you were younger? And I was like, does it really matter? I always did have a sensitive tummy when I was younger. If I ate really hot, spicy food, that's it. I would be in the toilet. And I'm lactose intolerant as well. Mm-hmm. So there's no good glass of milk for me, but yogurt's fine, you know. So
yeah.
Even as a younger person, I had sensitivities and in terms of food and so on. But I began to feel that people just wanted to solve a mystery and pinpoint and say, well, yeah, maybe you didn't this or it isn't, you know. I remember my mother-in-law was like, but this was before marriage also, you had this, right? As if it was like, it was not of marriage. And I was like, nobody's saying anything, you know.
I suppose people are trying to pinpoint and, you know, like, it's like a blame game. It's because of this that happened, you know. Whereas when we ask doctors that what causes it, there actually is no answer because science hasn't advanced enough to tell us what causes it, isn't it? But as lay people, we are trying to figure out, you know, or maybe it's the spicy food or maybe it's, I don't know, the marriage or whatever, all kinds of.
To me, I think as a patient, initially, yes, everyone has questions. So did I. But very soon after, you realize there are no real answers to a lot of these questions. So you come to terms with that fact very quickly. And, eventually, I suppose, part of the journey is coming to understand there's so many things I have answers to. Some I don't. I have to accept that.
Yes.
But I've noticed that other people do not come to that place as quickly And so part of the thing about being the patient is really having compassion towards others and their inability to really understand. And I've had to sort of develop that over the years as well.
Yeah.
You know, to just not get triggered by people who just keep asking you the same thing.
Same question.
20 years later, and they're coming back to the same thing. Didn't you try this, which I told you to take 10 years ago? I said, yeah, I tried it, didn't work. So it's about developing compassion towards those who don't understand. And I think that's a challenge as well. And sometimes you feel resentful because, hey, I'm the patient. Can I get some compassion, you know?
That's exactly what I was going to say, that it's the other way around, you know. Generally, we express, feeling bad about, you know, the challenges the patient is going through. But here, you are the one who's, tables are turned.
Yeah, it's about learning to live with people and accept that, you know, well, like I said, unless you actually have it yourself, you just can't imagine what the experience is like. And and I think that's something that I've applied to other areas in my life as well. You know, I've gone through a difficult patch. You haven't, you know, I can expect some level of empathy and compassion, but it's very different when you've walked in my shoes.
Exactly. So, you know,
just, okay, I'll give you that space to...
Okay. So I'm just curious about the treatment in the first couple of years that you were going through these episodes of diarrhea and some surgery and other things. Can you just share what kind of medication were you on?
Gosh, let me see. I think I have been over the years on practically every medication there is, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, the immediate quick fix is steroids when you are flaring. So I've had those when I was flaring. Mm-hmm. I've had the sulfur-based medicines. I've had one, I think mesalazine, and I have not tried. But then I developed an allergy to sulfur, and so I had to stop those. So over the years, I've ended up going through the whole range of medications. Yeah. And now I'm in a good place, I think, with biologics. They seem to be working for me.
Okay.
But again, when I flare up, it's always the steroids that help, IV steroids in hospital. So I think I've been with the same doctors for long enough now, over almost 18, 19 years now. Wow. So they have really got a whole history of what works for me and what doesn't. So there's a lot of stuff that actually works for others that I've tried and doesn't work. And so that has been a bit of a... Doesn't suit
your body, yeah?
And I think I'm also one of those who have was very sensitive to the medication. So the side effects are magnified for me. So that's something I really struggled with over the years, because immunosuppressants and biologics at the moment, and so the side effects are quite staggering.
Wow. So I'm just trying to go back to the point where when your Crohn's disease diagnosis was made, where exactly were the ulcers? Were they like concentrated in a certain part of the digestive tract, or were they all over?
Initially, at diagnosis, I would have had the classical symptoms. I would have had, I believe, some mouth ulcers coming and going. And then I would have had the typical symptoms at the
terminal ileum.
Yes.
That's the joint between the large intestine and the small intestine, right? So most of them would be there, right? Yeah. Okay. That's like a typical Crohn's disease case. And these steroids and immunosuppressants kind of managed it. But what we also understand is sometimes the ulcers can go deeper over time, especially because we're talking about like almost 20 years. So was there like a major surgery that happened in your case?
Yes, there was. I mean, you're right in saying that, you know, the ulcers go deeper. And when in those early years when things were not diagnosed, I mean, even though it seems like a short period of 3 years, then I went on treatment and things became quieter. And then I can't remember whether I actually had a maintenance medication or not before the birth of my daughter, but I was actually feeling quite well. But, you know, I think silently on the inside, things were still brewing. Certainly in the first 3 years before diagnosis, because what happened was it was discovered that I had narrowings in my small intestine. And the narrowings are due to prolonged over time inflammation and then healing with scarring and then inflammation, scarring. And so what happens is a normal intestinal tube, if you like, would be this wide. It just got narrower. I had patches of narrowings, and this became was not seen at diagnosis, but I think it was picked up later. So I went on liquid diets to avoid surgery, you know, to heal those narrowings, and that seemed to work for a while. And then I remember my father passed away, and it was very stressful, a very stressful period of time, and he was unwell in Malaysia. And I was up and down, and, you know, so much of sorrow, a lot of grieving.
Absolutely.
And a lot of things that I didn't get to heal over the years with my dad. And so I think emotionally I was in a very low space. And several months, well, he passed away in late September. And by January, I was prepping for surgery, really, because my gallbladder ended up having stones in it. And it was apparently falling apart on ultrasound.
Which year was this? Sorry.
2010, January.
Okay.
Chinese New Year, January, February 2010. I remember I was heading into Chinese New Year. So my gallbladder was giving me a lot of pain. And then they discovered that I had narrowings at the terminal ileum and higher up as well. They said, look, the higher up ones we're going to leave in the small intestine, but you've got to take out your gallbladder and you've got to take out close to 14 centimeters at the terminal ileum.
Wow.
So I had that done in 2010.
So that's about 10 or 11 years from your diagnosis that these changes happen. And we also know that actually stress kind of triggers a flare-up and worsening of symptoms. So yes, an emotional loss as large as, you know, what you, I mean, as serious as what you have gone through, losing a parent is really a big thing. At that time, they actually took you in for surgery, and about 15 centimeters of the small intestine was removed. Is that correct?
Yes, at the joint.
At the joint.
Small, maybe a bit of the large as well. I don't know if they refashioned the whole joint. I think mostly small. Plus, they removed my gallbladder.
Yes. Okay. Wow. And again, a whole lot of adjustments would be happening with your diet. Was there something specifically you had to change to manage now?
I think in terms of the Crohn's, of course, pre-surgery, but actually I was in hospital for a few weeks because they had to prep me up nutritionally for surgery because I wasn't able to eat. The narrowings plus the gallbladder, everything was just so bad. So I was fed through a bag, from a bag into a tube in my arm, you know, and to fatten me up, so to speak, for surgery. So I was being fattened. And then after that, of course, was a soft diet because, you know, to sort of rest the gut as well. And then eventually switching to semi-solid foods and so on. So I had to be very careful. Post-surgery. But I think the greater change for me was coping without a gallbladder. It took a while for me to. I began to have a lot of very oily, yellowy diarrhea, which was completely different from the usual. And I realized it was because the gallbladder stores the bile. And so when you eat fatty food, the bile is released to digest that. So now I had no gallbladder. So this bile was just running through me.
Wow.
So it was actually setting off my system. And I had like 15, 20 gallish bile diarrheas a day. And I was completely drained. And I had four kids by 2003. I had four kids actually, which was lovely. But 2010, the whole of 2010 was watery bile, yellow diarrhea. And then the doctor said, look, you take a particular medication, which is a powdered form, you mix it in with water and you drink it and it helps control the bile. And that was like magic, you know. It really helped, and that reduced the diarrheas.
Okay.
So for me, I think post-surgery, it was coping without having a gallbladder first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then adjusting the diet back to something more normalish, slowly, and carefully.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. It's so many things you've actually gone through. I was curious about the years your other two children were born, because we did talk about, you know, 96, 97, that time when you had the first two children, but the next were born in which years? And do you see any relationship between your flaring up of symptoms and pregnancy as such? Yeah. Was there anything in your experience?
My daughter was born in 2002, April 2002. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling so well, you know, a couple of years
that's
before.
That's nice.
Yeah, I had actually reached a kind of plateau where I felt quite well.
Yeah.
And I said, let's take another one. So we did, you know, and it was lovely to have a girl after two boys. And then in 2003, my youngest just sort of came along and I had another son, a lovely little smoothie. So it was it was wonderful. But I remember now looking back, even though in the first pregnancy, I seemed to have triggered diarrhea. Mm-hmm. In the subsequent pregnancies, funnily enough, I actually felt quite well during the pregnancies. It was post-delivery that I think as the hormonal changes came in, that's when the symptoms got worse, you know. So during pregnancy, I felt well. Post-pregnancy, it was a slight downhill. I remember one of my doctors jokingly said to me, I think the cure for you is pregnancy. And I remember saying, well, then, who's going to look after my 50 children or something? But that was good. It was lovely in that sense that those years, you know, the pregnancies were good. And of course, I worried about how the kids would turn out, you know, because you try and have the best nutrition you can and everything.
Yes.
And during my last pregnancy in 2003, I was actually anemic on I don't know how that happened, but it turned out that I was anemic. And I remember I was actually homeschooling, which is a whole different story, but I had these kids at home, I was anemic, and I was like overwhelmed.
But if you think about it, there are many people who are not diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and they do get anemic during, you know, pregnancy, or they develop things like diabetes or other issues. So if we put it in that perspective, it's like, okay, it's one of those things, but it's not like you had diarrhea with blood at that time, did you?
Actually very rarely had diarrhea with blood. And you always look out for blood because that means that, you know, you're bleeding higher up. Is it dark blood? Is it fresh blood? What does it look like, you know? So I didn't have, I very rarely have had, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, when you had the youngest one, were there some concerns from your family or extended family that having children, having Crohn's disease and having children, is there anything that they they were concerned about, or was it your own concern? Could you share with us?
I don't think anyone thought in terms of the genetic side of things, you know, should we be having kids or not? Because anyway, by the time I was diagnosed, I already had two sons. So, yeah, no one really said anything. Well, there was a small hint, maybe you're not so well. Are you sure you can manage four kids? And I was like, of course I can.
That's good.
A handful of things, you know. But I did have, yeah, one or two. Well, you know, it's always the grandmas who are worrying themselves silly. So I remember the grandmas, they were a bit worried. But now that the kids are all grown up and wonderful, they're like, they're the best thing ever, you know.
Yes, so, yes. I totally second that, having seen your children. They are beautiful and bright and intelligent. Wow, it's amazing. You've done a fantastic job keeping your willpower together and raising the children despite all these challenges, yeah? And what I'm amazed also is you paint, you also play an instrument, you swim, you love cooking, and you love studying. I mean, the number of academic qualifications you have is amazing. So can you share, what's your secret?
You know, I don't really have a secret as such. I guess it's two levels. One of it is wanting to keep myself busy and occupied and fulfilled on some level. And I find that some of these things contribute to that. I love my painting. Oh, my playing my cello is sort of like kind of die down a little bit because I get joint pains in my fingers and that's not fun. So I got a bit lazy with that. Cooking, because, you know, the kids have been home because of COVID, so it's nice to have people to feed, and I enjoy that. I'm trying to, you know, look after my body so I can age well. I think that's an important part of things too. And in terms of the studying, I'm always trying different things and maybe think, oh, this doesn't work and I'll try something else. But I think I just need to keep myself mentally challenged on some level. And I find that structured learning through a course, for example, is what I need, because otherwise I don't have the discipline, I'll confess. I'd rather be watch my favorite Netflix show than study if I can get away with it. But a structured course kind of forces you to work. So yes. I sign up for that because, you know, it gives me the structure. And that's one level, my own personal fulfillment. The other one is, I think also my kids love to cheer me on. And they love seeing me busy and occupied and happy doing the stuff I enjoy. And if I'm at school, then I'm like, hey, Mom's working and studying and cooking, so can you all don't be so lazy yourself, that kind of thing. So once in a while we have this banter where I'm like, hey, Mom's still trying, you know. And I think they appreciate the fact that I'm managing my own fulfillment and happiness rather than, you know, relying on them or outside external sources to find something to keep me happy, you know.
Yeah,
because we went through as a family, you know, I got divorced 3.5 years ago. So we had several years of some turbulence. And I think coming out of that with a sense of seeking things that fulfill me, keep me busy mentally, so I'm not worrying or thinking about the past, but building my own future gives my children reassurance that Mom will be okay. And if Mom is okay, then they have a foundation, a secure foundation to feel that, you know, everything will be okay. So I think that helps on two levels, for me and for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when 3 years ago you were going through a divorce, that again would have caused some stress. And what was the impact of that on your body? And, you know, I'm thinking about Crohn's disease.
Actually, events would have started back in 2013 when I broke my ankle. Actually, I broke my ankle. It was such a silly, small thing. But my bones, I think, over the years had become a bit brittle with the steroids on and off. And so I broke my ankle. And then, you know, things just spiraled downwards from there. And in terms of the Crohn's, I would say, yes, they were, you know, my health. It was a struggle to stay well. And I think initially I was in a space where, okay, maybe things will work out. So, you know, I didn't go and see my doctor. I didn't go and tell my, I didn't tell my doctor what was happening. I didn't want to, like, almost, I was living in denial in a way, plus a major dose of hope, you know, maybe things will be okay. So Yeah, I was trying to manage a lot on my own. And I think when we try and manage on our own, you know, we don't get clarity of where we're going and what the real situation is. Yeah. So I think it was affecting my body and my mind on some level. So my health did spiral down, and eventually I had to come to a place where I accepted that, you know, my marriage was over. Mm-hmm. And I think when the actual divorce started, I think, the stress was unbelievable, and my health suffered. So I had to journey much more closely with my doctors. I went for counseling, which was helpful. Mm. And, I relied on my faith. I had spiritual direction. I rediscovered a lot of important, you know, anchors in my life. Mm. And then I decided, you know, to turn my life around as well. And I think a key part of acceptance really was just, how can I make my life meaningful in terms of helping other people who are journeying through the same sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where my direction had gone.
Yeah, Pavitar, I think you are so mature and smart in making those choices that you realize that there is a need to tap on external help, get the experts in to help you, yeah? Mm-hmm. To go through this kind of burden alone is not easy. So getting help from a counselor was, I would think, quite useful for you. And the kind of willpower you have expressed all through the years, there's only so much anybody can go on such a journey, you know, with the illness. And wow, hats off to you, Pavitar. You've done a lot. And I'm just beginning to think that when it comes to the impact on the children, you have managed so well, and you would probably be a role model that. It's only some people that we come across who go through so much in their one lifespan, and you are still a young mother and having gone through so much and raising them so well and successfully. Did their health get impacted? Are they all fine? Yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah.
I think, you know, when I was diagnosed with Crohn's and I read about, I bought this book, you know, and all the info you need about Crohn's. And I remember the whole finding out about the genetic thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And when I eventually had all four kids, I remember one of the things, I write a blog actually, and there's a blog post years ago where I wrote about the fear of, or not fear, but desperately not wanting one of my kids to be diagnosed with Crohn's. And just praying, you know, that they would be spared what I had gone through. My youngest son, who was born in 2003, he went through a patch with his health. And I remember it sort of overlapped with my first surgery. Mm. I mean, I've actually had two surgeries, but the second one was, you know, a whole different cup of tea. But my first surgery in 2010, I was so ill, and I remember several weeks of being in hospital, and then after that, and you know, and I had a new helper who looked after the kids or at the home, and she wasn't very nice. And you know, I look back now and I think, gosh, was it because I always feel a bit of guilt thinking, is it because I was so wrapped up in my own health that I didn't notice that he was actually losing weight over a few weeks? And then when I realized, recovered from my surgery, I realized that actually he had gone downhill a bit in terms of his health. He would have been about 10, maybe about 8, heading to 8 years, 7+.
Yeah, so this is 2010, and isn't that the same time you lost your father also?
He passed away in 2009. September, October 2009, and then I had surgery early 2010. Mm-hmm. And then Aman, my youngest son, was just sort of deteriorating in terms of his health. And I remember what happened was he suddenly developed fevers. He kept getting these fevers, you know, and we couldn't send him to school. And he missed 3 months of school, and he'd have fever. And then we took him to a GP, and the GP said, okay, try these antibiotics. He got better. Then the fever would come back. So for over 3 months, it was a very mysterious, feverish thing. And then in the end, it wasn't just a GP, she was a child specialist in private practice. She said to me, look, with your history of Crohn's, I would recommend going to see a particular professor at a public hospital. And so we ended up going to NUH. And And I suppose because of my history, especially, you know, and also what he was experiencing was something classically known as failure to thrive. He wasn't gaining weight.
Okay.
In fact, he was so skinny that you could almost see his heart beating beneath his skin. You know, it was just so thin, skin and bones. Oh. And I was so worried about him.
Yes. Yes.
But I think on one level somewhere, I just didn't want to admit that maybe, you know, he had bones.
As a mother, absolutely. We would wish for the children to be okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. So I remember the day we took him in for his scopes. He had to have the barium x-ray done. He had to have his scopes done. And I myself was not that well, you know, post-surgery. It took a long time for me to recover. You know, people think just because you've had surgery, you're bouncing around in 2 months' time. And I got back on my feet. But I think it took me over a year to actually recover. So anyone going into surgery, please give yourself plenty of time, you know, to really recover on every level. It could even take more than a year. But I had no clue at that point. You know, I thought, oh, I've got to get back on my feet. I got 4 young kids, etc. So I remember him being wheeled in and they reassured us he would be all right. I remember how tiny, you know, he looked. And how sad I felt because my greatest fear in that sense had come true. But, you know, the amazing thing is, well, the doctors weren't 100% sure. You know, they couldn't say we are 100% sure.
They couldn't clearly diagnose him as having Crohn's disease or being okay, But did they say, oh, there's a possibility he doesn't have Crohn's disease? It's just some fever.
No, I think they said he does have some Crohn's. We can't be 100% sure it's Crohn's or not, or just some form of colitis or something. But he had an issue. He had some narrowing somewhere as well in the small intestine.
Okay. That actually, did show, it showed up in the scans, is it? Yeah.
Showed up in the barium x-rays.
Okay.
That's what they used for the small intestine. So
the blood test, did the blood test show inflammation in his case? They would have done ESR, CRP kind of tests.
I'm trying to remember, you know, at diagnosis, would have done. For
I'm sorry. It's a long time ago. It's more than 10 years, but I'm just curious. Yeah.
No, we did everything. We did all the workup, everything, you know. Mm. And so they put everything together. In fact, I remember something else. I remember one of the things that for me was really actually quite conclusive was in between. And I think this was a thing that hastened us to NUH. I remember now. Was he suddenly developed these bruisings below his skin on his legs?
Oh.
Term for it, and it just slips my mind now.
Yeah.
But it's inflammation of the fatty deposits.
Yes.
The skin. And they would just, the bruise would appear at the lower shin and they would just move up the leg seemingly. Mm. But it's just different fatty deposits getting inflamed and bruised. And I looked at that.
Erythrinoma or something. Nodosum. Something like that. Nodosum. Yes. Right. Yes. It's a blue black, it shows up as blue black on the shin of people.
Of the legs.
Yes. Of the legs,
He had that amazing number of bruises. And I remember when I took him to NUH, they said, this is a classic sign. I said, I know, which is why I'm here. You know, I think his manifestation is a bit different from mine.
Yes.
Because he didn't have buckets of diarrhea.
Yes.
He didn't. But he had a lot of colic pain. And there was a point where he couldn't eat without pain. And I think that contributed a bit to the weight loss, you know. And then when these bruises came up and I said, gosh, different patients have different kinds of manifestations,
yes,
right?
So
this is obviously different from mine.
Yeah.
So when we took him to the hospital, I remember doctors came and actually photographed his legs and, you know, the little group of students came and had a look because they had not seen
children with those symptoms.
Of erythema nodosum in such a long time. So I think they put the pieces together and they said, well, yeah, it looks like this is what he's has, especially with the mother's diagnosis
history.
As well. And so they treated him that way. And for a while, it was antibiotics to bring down the fevers. And then he was put on a liquid diet. Mm. And my heart broke because, you know, I had been on liquid diets a few times prior to that. And I knew how hard it was.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my poor son, you know. And yeah. he managed to get back to school. So we would go to school and deliver his drink to yeah. him. And
Sorry for interrupting, Pavitar. But for the benefit of our listeners, I think we might want to share a little bit what's mm-hmm. meant by a liquid diet. Does it mean stopping all food or is it as a supplement? Could you share?
Yes. Well, in his case, I think because he was just freshly diagnosed and I think they wanted to, he had been on steroids and I think they wanted to spare him steroids and, mm-hmm. you know, hasten him into a state of remission as fast as they could. They said, look, the best thing you can do is to stop eating mm-hmm. and give your gut a full rest. Mm-hmm. And so they said, you can have this drink called Modulin, okay. Which I think, if I'm not wrong, has some forms of anti-inflammatory component in it. Not sure exactly what's in it, but, you know, it's yeah. modified it's so a, that it helps. Yeah.
It's a nutritional drink, right? Yeah. yeah. It's like a complete meal provided yeah. through this drink, yeah?
No, it meets your nutritional requirements, but I think there's also a component that's medicinal as well.
Okay.
Yeah, mm. in Modulin anyway, mm. and as opposed to, say, Ensure or some of the other nutritional drinks. But Modulin, yeah. I think, has something more. Mm. And so he was game. He said, okay. And to his credit, he went for, I think, 7 or 8 weeks without food. Wow. Just drinking Modulin several yeah. times a day. I think the max we got him up to was 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. Drinks a day, and he made it back to school. We would deliver his drink to him freshly mixed. Mm-hmm. He weaned off steroids mm-hmm. and then he began to put on weight, mm-hmm. partly because of the steroid use, but eventually his weight sort of stabilized.
Yeah,
and I think he went into full remission from there. And, you know, the doctor was so pleased.
Wow, amazing, right? Yeah, it's amazing.
I think he's always had a mild case of Crohn's. If you were to ask on the range of mild to severe, where would he be? He has always been on the milder side.
Yeah. Mm.
So I think what happened then was he was fine for a few years. And then the time when I broke my ankle in 2013, he suddenly developed fever and a bad cough. And then lost his appetite. And I think for him, when he gets an infection, there's a possibility the immune system sort of goes into overdrive and then it affects his, you know, the Crohn's. So he had to be admitted at the same time as me. I was in hospital for my broken ankle and he was there for a flare-up of Crohn's. It was rather stressful at that yeah. time. Yeah. But he went on antibiotics again and then recovered.
Okay.
And ever since then, he's been on immunosuppressants, a tiny dose, mm-hmm. and it's kept him well.
Okay, fantastic.
You know, we watched for all the milestones that
yeah.
That he went to, from failure to thrive, which was mm-hmm. a bit scary because really he was going down. He then went into, he hit all the targets for puberty and adolescence and whatnot. You know, his voice changed, wow. became a man and everything. 6 feet tall now. So
he's wow.
skinny but tall. So, yeah. you know, just knowing that he's well has been, you know,
Amazing.
A real yeah. gift, a real gift to right. me.
Yeah. Fantastic. I think it's such a pleasure hearing about the child going through the journey and then being able to manage with just a little bit of medication, a little bit of help, but his height, weight, everything has kept on par with and actually yeah. beyond many other children, in fact. Yeah. So he's gone to his full potential. And that truly is a success story and a lot of hard work and love that comes from the mother. I would say hats off to you once again. Yeah. Without the support from a person who truly understands what the patient is going through, he wouldn't have been able to get there. So in a way, you have played a very, very significant role model part, not only for your immediate family, but also for the others who are listening today, that there is hope. Yeah, children who get diagnosed can also thrive. This is what comes out today. Thank you so much, Pavitar, for sharing everything with us. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor to be able to talk to you and bring this journey to the others who are listening out there and worried about the illness and their probably their future. They might be worried about their future, but then you bring so much hope. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's, you know, my, I guess for me, it's, there is hope. You know, I think that's one of the things that keeps us all going. I know it's kept me going, you know, reaching out and finding others who have journeyed the same way or similar path and knowing we're not alone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We hope you found today's conversation useful, and we look forward to you joining us in the next episode. For more information about joining the patient support group, please contact the Crohn's and Colitis Society of Singapore. You can reach us via email at admin@ibd.org.sg or WhatsApp at +65 9756 4066. Do visit our website www.ibd.org.sg to know more about our annual seminar, financial assistance schemes, and how you could join us as a member, meet other patients, as well as parents of children living with IBD.